personal interest in this topic. I will admit that my main interest in life is meteorites and Mars, not necessarily whether things are planets or not, but I have personal interest in this because, honestly, I'm from the state of Arizona, and Pluto is our planet. We discovered it. And, frankly, we have a bit of a complex being the last of the 48 continental United States to become a state. You know, we have a bit of a complex about these things, whether we, you know, are something or not. So, you know, they're messing with our planet, Pluto. But, nonetheless, the other story I'll relate about this being a topic that has come up even before the debate started with Pluto, I had the privilege of serving on a presidential commission a few years ago when President Bush first announced plans to go back to the moon and onto Mars. They formed a presidential commission to make some recommendations to NASA about how to do it. And at that time, I was a professor at Arizona State University. And the first call I had from the White House to interview me to be on this presidential commission said, well, you're a planetary scientist, right? And I said, yes. They said, well, but the moon isn't a planet, so how does that work? Well, it's formed by planetary processes, so, you know, they're kind of all the same thing to us, but we don't worry too much about what we call a planet or what we don't. Well, you know, little did I know that soon we would be all worrying about it a lot more. I think, to me, the value of this dialogue is to force us all to question our assumptions and to push the edge of our understanding. I believe that, you know, when we've discovered weird life on our planet. You guys have probably talked about some biological classification over the last couple of days. There's plenty of things that we may not have classified as life in the definitions that we described it, you know, a long time ago. And this should be a good sign of a healthy scientific endeavor that we are questioning our underlying assumptions and our underlying classification schemes that fundamentally are about allowing us to have a language that describes what we do. And so I, rather than calling this the Great Planet Debate, I guess I would think of it as the Great Planet Dialogue. And again, dialogue defined as discovering meaning through, your meaning flowing through is literally what dialogue means. And meaning or understanding is what we're about here, where debate is to break something, to break it down, break as in kill, kill, kill. Well, you know, that's maybe that's what we were trying to do to each other here, but to me this is about creating communities with common understandings of the meaning of things, and you do that through dialogue. So to me, the Great Planet Dialogue is a very rewarding thing. I want to introduce wonderful panel members that we have here. I'm going to give them each a very brief introduction, ask them to say a couple of minutes worth of remarks, and then the main goal here is to create a dialogue here, interaction among the group. Let me just very quickly run through, let's see, all right, I'll do them in the order that they are here. Sitting, sorry, I have to flip through my notes. Hal Levison is a research scientist at the Southwest Research Institute in Boulder, Colorado. His principal research interests lie in the area of dynamics of astronomical objects, particularly solar system bodies. His research includes studies of the long-term dynamical behavior of comets, the dynamics of objects in the Kuiper Belt, and the origin and stability of Trojan asteroids and the formation of planets. So that's Hal Levison. Next to him, we have Owen Gingrich, a senior astronomer emeritus at the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory and professor emeritus of astronomy and history of science at Harvard University. He chaired, as you probably have already figured out over the last couple of days, he chaired the Planet Definition Committee of the IAU, whose carefully formulated recommendations were overturned in Prague. And next we have Larry Lebowski.
No, he just goes by Larry.
Sorry, I was cutting in the way there, sorry.
It's an occultation.
Thank you. Larry's a retired planetary scientist and an education specialist at the Planetary Science Institute and University of Arizona. He was the recipient of the Sagan Medal of the Department of Division of Planetary Sciences for his contribution to education and public outreach in the name of planetary science. Mark Sykes is also from the Planetary Science Institute. He's, in fact, the director of it. And PSI, for those of you that don't know, is a private nonprofit corporation headquartered in Tucson, and lots of wonderful planetary scientists work there, and Mark is the mastermind. He's also a member of the Dawn Science team, and you probably spoke some about Dawn yesterday, is that right? So it'll be orbiting Vesta and Ceres later next decade. He has studied Pluto in the thermal infrared and determined that its surface was not isothermal. He's the discoverer of cometary dust trails and numerous interplanetary dust bands arising from recent catastrophic disruptions of asteroids. And finally, David Morrison is a planetary scientist at NASA Ames Research Center in Northern California. He's currently serving as the interim director of the NASA Lunar Science Institute and is a senior scientist at the NASA Astrobiology Institute. He was on the IAU Working Group for Planetary System Nomenclature for 2 decades and is a textbook author and popular writer. And as such, he has experience in communicating planetary science to students and the public. David, I know that you need to leave before the end of the panel. May I ask you, sir, to speak first?
Absolutely. Once again, let me say what a pleasure it's been to be here for this discussion. Very informative. I especially thought these last two talks on the dynamical approach and the geophysical approach were each compelling. And it made me once again reiterate what I said earlier this afternoon, that I really hope we don't hear try to come up...
Hold on 1 second, David. We're getting some feedback.
Yes.
So let's go to this mic.
Okay. Maybe I just shouldn't be so close.
No, it's something.
Okay, now that you've interrupted my train of thought.
Sorry.
Deliberately.
I hope that we won't try to substitute some sort of committee form definition here to promulgate, as it almost surely would be better than the IAU definition. But I really think that defining things is not what we're about. From a science point of view, it's understanding things. And from a communications point of view, you have to look at the context and the audience. And I'm reminded, I mentioned earlier in a discussion, the distinction between comets and asteroids. There are lots of differences. If I were talking to amateur astronomers, I'd stress the visual part, that a comet has a tail and an asteroid doesn't. But if I were talking about impacts, I wouldn't make a distinction at all, because what you're hit by hardly matters if you're killed by it. In fact, just on Monday, I was being interviewed by National Geographic, and we talked about this. And they said, well, can't we just call anything that hits us a meteor? And I thought about, well, that's not quite right astronomically. But sure, why not? And so for their purposes, it was a meteor. And I think that it's important for us to try to improve our understanding of what a planet is and to improve our communication skills, but not to enforce some sort of definition that we expect others to follow.
Just pass it on down?
Please.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I agree in part, but I think that at some point... particularly when cat's out of the bag and people are making definitions, and that, you know, and we're here discussing that in part, that it does have to be addressed. And actually, listening to the last two talks, I think that it is quite possible to put everything together in a happy way that respects both the perspective of the geophysical definition as well as the dynamical definition, as was so laid out previously. And that is by looking at the breadth of each. And the geophysical definition is pretty broad, particularly if you take it to Allen's extremes. And and you can deal with that in terms of calling things like Triton or Titan as planets. You put a satellite planet in front of it, and it indicates where it is. But then you can also embrace the dynamical perspective, because those objects are a subset of the geophysical planets. And so one could teach the geophysical planets, and then however one wanted to do it or at whatever time, one could also hold up the importance of the dynamical perspective as well. And so they don't have to be inconsistent if you start from the broader perspective and include the things which encompass a smaller group of objects.
Can you put up my slide?
I didn't know that was going to
happen. Question I have is lexicon in most of our students' lexicon? Words are words. Are we going to put it? Does he remember my slide?
Yeah.
Oh, very good. To me, Looking at visuals is an important thing. When we make an observation, what we observe and how we describe it is the most important thing. When we have words in our mind, we convey the picture we have in our mind. We have our... It's not up on the...
Is that the comment?
It's coming. There it is, yes. I was going to try using this yesterday. And what you want to read is, despite its name, the thesaurus was quite often at loss for words. We are humans, and our ability to convey pictures in our mind to others is what makes us humans and separates us from the other animals. And what's important to us is how we convey the pictures in our minds, communication. My shuttle driver the other day was saying, well, he pictures something in his mind when he's trying to convey it to his kids. When we are trying to convey what we see or what we observe, the pictures we have in our minds is what we're conveying to teachers, to the public, to students. So, and as I said yesterday, you can read something, 10% you'll remember. You can hear somebody tell you something. But showing pictures, which is everything we've been doing today and yesterday, we put lots of words up on there, but we also put a picture in there because connecting those words with those pictures helps us understand what we're trying to get across. Communication is pictures and words. And so whatever we do, we need to think of the students, the teachers, the, as David said, who we're communicating with, and pictures help us do that. So if we look at images of planets, or what we call planets, or dwarf planets, it's those images that help us understand what we're looking at. We look at the pictures and we go, hey, that object looks like that object. Maybe they're both planets. That object looks a little different than another. Its color's different. It's got an atmosphere. Then it sets it apart. Why are there differences? Why are there similarities? Can't do that with words. Got to do it with pictures. Put this all together this, you know, last couple of hours, so hope I got across in images what I'm trying to explain.
I suppose some of you are aware that these days I mostly do history of astronomy. Of course, 2 years ago is already history. So I'm not necessarily totally au courant with everything that's going on these days. So this is the time of the Olympics, and we're reading in the newspapers about all the gold medals. And if I were handing out a gold medal for a paper, I thought that Renu's paper this morning was just terrific. I learned so much from it. She would get my gold medal for the most interesting and informative paper from my point of view. Now, the second remark I want to make is I really should make an apology to Hal Levison, because he felt that I was probably demonizing the dynamicists, and that wasn't my intention. In fact, when I showed the picture of the distribution of these hundreds, probably thousands of asteroids, minor planets beyond Neptune, I was going to remark that there is a very interesting discovery showing on this image. That is the relative clearing of the area between Neptune and Saturn compared to what lies in that Kuiper belt immediately outside it. But when I heard Steve Soter's paper, and he said that it shouldn't have been clearing the neighborhood, it should have said it's the dominant planet in its zone, bells rang in my mind, and I realized that as I was leaving Prague, that was the wording in the resolution. And I was appalled when I was watching the streaming video of the actual session going on in Prague to realize that somehow in the next 24 hours that had been changed back. And I think it had been changed back probably by the insistence of one of the very
vocal,
yes, arrogant,
yes,
scrappy dynamicists. And I'm afraid his image And it wasn't Hal. Hal was was a voice of reason. He was working on a compromise, which I think would have been, you know, would have saved the day. But at any rate, he had said, not Hal, but this other anonymous person, that if we could not include in the definition clearing the neighborhood, his entire life's work would be abrogated. That somehow he cut into his psyche so deeply. And that was, that kind of image was part of what I associate with the revolt, and it doesn't necessarily characterize the behavior of the dynamicist. So that's my apology to
you. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. One of the reasons why I decided to come to this meeting, and I thought about it a lot actually, was that I felt that a portion of the community was being demonized by the press and the public, right, having to do with dynamicists, and I don't think it's fair, really, or historically accurate. So thank you for doing that. I really have no opening comments to make. I think everybody in this room understands where I'm coming from and what my position is. You've been hearing it for the last 2 days. And I come to meetings usually in order to learn. And I must admit that although my colleagues gave excellent scientific talks, because of the nature of this meeting, I really didn't learn anything from them because they didn't say anything that was really new, right? And so in this idea that I want to learn, one thing that became clear to me yesterday is within our culture, from your guys' perspective, there's a correlation between the word planet and important, right? And I am hoping from this panel discussion to get an idea from you. I don't understand that, right? To get an idea from you guys why that relationship exists. And that'll help me understand where you guys are coming from, right? Taking a classification and making groupings of classifications from a population is naturally what we do in astronomy. The idea of taking the word planet and restricting it to a small group of objects is how classification schemes work. If you make the word planet mean everything, then it's not an interesting classification. So somehow there's a cultural meaning to the word that I don't think fits into the scientific idea of classifying objects. So I'm hoping to get an answer to that during this panel discussion. Thank you.
You guys keep that so you can pass it around. I think I've got this working.
But you've just said, by the way, that you were advocating to call those eight the classical planets, and that would have solved the problem because it would have meant that planet itself as a word was not touched.
Yeah, well, I viewed my role at this IAU revolt, which I was at. Okay, and then subsequently, as Owen said, was asked to become part of a member of the people rewriting the definition. Unfortunately, I had to leave before that was completed. Right, and my nature is to try to find compromises. If I did it from my own perspective, the word planet would be the eight classical planets, and that all the other objects would not be considered planets. But that doesn't mean that I'm not willing to compromise on that.
That means you would ignore extrasolar objects?
I meant within the solar system, okay? But still use some kind of discriminator. Like I said in my talk, I prefer a size distribution to discriminate between a major object in the solar system and smaller objects. I think compromise, we were so close, right, at the IAU. We had classical planets, we had dwarf planets. Everybody in the room was happy until one of the members of the IAU group asked the question of whether dwarf planets were planets. And then it was almost like a fist fight after that.
So he thought planets were important too.
Yeah. I don't remember that part of it. I was getting pretty weary at that point.
Blacked out for a while. So anybody want to try and...
Let me just ask one question. Do we think, I think from the previous things, that the press is interested in this meeting? What do you think the message is they will take from this meeting?
Kelly?
If you were my student, I would be very upset with you right now because you'd be working on your computer as opposed to listening to us.
I am actually typing what you said. As is Dave Shiga behind me. In fact, at this moment. Wow, I'm caught a little flat-footed by that. I think that there is... The principal problem with the takeaway from this meeting is that it's not a representative cross-section of planetary scientists and therefore their opinions. And so it represents one set of opinions, but it's not enough of a diverse set of opinions to allow the participants to draw a consensus. However, I am squarely with Dave Morrison, and I've said this, that I think that the current IAU definition ought to be revised or revoked as quickly as possible.
I'm fascinated that you think there's just one set of opinions here.
Set.
One set of people here.
Yes.
Okay, in real life, I'm a life science teacher. So I sit here and I listen to this, and when I was growing up, I love saying that to kids, so I'll say it to kids too. When I was growing up, there were just animals and plants, right? Everything was an animal or a plant, and then you got to fungus, and you said, well, it was a really weird plant. So then we went from two kingdoms to three, and then five. Now we have six kingdoms. As we've learned more, we've learned about DNA, we've been able to split it out and get much more specific. And then above all that are three domains. My question is, I have no problem with having a billion planets, a cabillion planets, but then let's have...
Yeah, that's the belief. You're going to take it away now.
But then, a kingdom, and then within that you have the smaller groups that define different types of planets, just right. Like you have... different types of living organisms.
Yeah, I wrote down as well.
Moderator. I mean, let me ask you a question, right? If I may. Because this is where I don't understand, right? No one is denying that the Kuiper Belt is there. Nobody is denying that these are important, interesting objects. No one is denying that some of them are around. So why does it matter? You talk about dividing life into sections, right? And in the same breath, you say, so we have to divide planets into sections. And why does it matter whether these individual groupings are considered planets or not? That's my question for all of you, right? This is what I don't understand.
I guess my not understanding is why you can't have a broad, big thing
of your category
and then group within it.
You
why
can.
Does it have to be a small group?
But why does it matter which way you do it to you?
You know what? It doesn't. What does matter is that somebody somewhere down the line, somewhere, sometime, comes up with an answer, a definition. Right now, I feel like we don't really have a consensus.
Well, we certainly don't have a consensus, but that's sort of not the question. I mean, the people, you guys seem to be really, really passionate about the idea to make the planethood inclusive as possible, right? So rather than elevating it to the kings of the solar system, which I must admit, which is what I would do, right? Somehow that matters to you as to whether dwarf planets are planets or not. We're all agreeing, I think, that you have the eight classicals, you have the dwarfs, and you have minor planets. And the issue is whether this intermediate group are planets or not. And I don't want to try to understand that.
Yeah, okay. The word planets as a name.
It doesn't matter what you call it. I'm not talking about what you call it.
It does matter what you call it.
Good question here.
Yeah.
Let me just, first of all, in case you haven't met them yet, we have some members of Clyde Tombaugh's family here.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay. And in particular, the person who wants to ask the next question is Annette Tombaugh, who is his daughter. And her husband, and the grandson over here.
First of all, I want to say we're delighted to be here, and we're glad to have the opportunity to hear what really happened to Pluto. We got kind of broadsided by this, and this is a direct reply to you, Hal. There are social aspects involved with what you call the object. When it was first demoted to non-planetary status, we were bombarded from early morning for about 4 days by the press. We were Pavarotti'd. It becomes important because people do hold the word planet in higher esteem than they do other terminology that would be used. One of the things that happened to us is that some people like to demote heroes, and my dad was a hero. And suddenly people were saying, let's take the name after the, off of the school that is named for him. Let's take the street names off of the streets that are named for him. His belongings, his telescopes, are no longer the value they were before. This had a social impact on our family. I wanted to come here with an open mind to hear what happened, why it happened, and to hear both viewpoints. And it has been a very successful seminar for me from that standpoint, because I can now more clearly explain to people, particularly students, since I am a teacher, what happened, why it happened, and how it happened. And I thank all of you that organized this conference for that point.
Man. Does any of you
want
to?
Larry's
in. I was going to say, as an educator, to me, looking at the broad perspective is the most important thing. To just all of a sudden say we have eight planets, end of story, then there's everything else, concerns me. You look at the whole picture, as I do, I showed a slide yesterday of kids sitting down on the floor with these objects and putting them into groups, to categorizing them. Should it really matter if this red object here, which is a golf ball, we call it a golf ball, on this table, if we move it over here, is it no longer a golf ball? It's still the same object. You look at all of its properties. You look at dynamics. You look at whether it has an atmosphere, whether it's round or not. Those are the important things for helping us categorize it. Those are all secondary. So having a broader group of objects, which may be 10, 20, 30, 50, or 100, that's great. Then you start looking at its other properties. Alan went this morning a little bit further than that, or whenever you talked this afternoon, to calling everything planets, even if they go around another planet. I would go with Mark, I'm saying, calling them, what was the term you used?
Well, I just said
satellite planets, because they are very different objects.
It's like an adjective in front of
an adjective. Because
it's a subclass.
They have most of the characteristics of the other planets. But not all planets have all the same characteristics. Mercury doesn't have a really big atmosphere. Pluto does have an atmosphere. So why is Pluto not a planet? Mercury is. There are very different things for each of these objects. And so you have to look at all of those properties. And to me, looking at a broader thing and calling them the classical planets, the dwarf planets, and saying they're all planetary-like bodies is a more important thing, because I think when we look at the dwarf planets, we're going to see that they have different properties. Some of them are icy, some of them are rocky, some of them have high albedos, which may imply having an atmosphere, or they're dark. Is it because they've got rocky surfaces or organic surfaces? We don't know until maybe we go there or we study them more. But they're all very similar bodies in many respects.
I want to let Hal say something as well.
Well, I just want to ask, direct a question to Hal first, then I'll hand it over to him. And that is, if planet doesn't mean that much or shouldn't mean that much, then why worry about assigning it to eight objects? Why not just call the eight objects dynamical giants and let planet be used however else other people want to use it?
let me answer your question first, okay? And that is, I don't care, right? That's been the position I've always taken, right? Matter of fact, maybe the thing we should have done at the IAU is gone back to the classic definition of anything that goes around the sun is a planet, right? And then divide it up to minor, dwarf, and major planets. And that, I would have been perfectly happy with this. So I really, from this particular level, what I think if you got out of my talk is if you look at massive versus semi-major axes, there are eight big guys, right? And I want a classification scheme where those eight big guys are somehow recognized to being the eight big guys, right? But I want to get something back to Larry, to what Larry said, because this brings home what I'm saying. You said, I want to consider as many objects as possible. But why can objects that are not planets be considered? You just hit the nail right on the head of what I'm talking about, right? That you want to, right? To me, the coolest thing in the solar system is the Kuiper Belt. To me, Clyde Tombaugh found the most important structure in the Kuiper Belt, in the solar system. It is the biggest thing. It has the most objects in it. It has tells us probably the most about how the planetary system formed. And it doesn't matter to me that the consideration of those objects shouldn't be dependent on them being called planets.
I think we should hear from some more folks on this side of the room, and then we'll come over here. So let's continue over.
Well, I think all of you are, so I'm an educator. I teach a lifelong learning class in the universe. And frankly, I want to answer your question, Hal, to start with. And I don't think anybody else has expressed this the entire time we've been here. I kind of like when I get up in the morning, and I put my feet on the floor, and I can breathe air. I like it when I have a floor to put my feet on. Or walk outside in my yard and realize that I'm on the third rock from the sun, whether you call it a planet or not.
But you're not.
And we're rotating around.
But you're not on the third rock. There are probably hundreds of rocks between here and the sun.
That's another classification that you've obviously not heard of. It used to be a TV program.
I know. But
what is the point is, you have to have a classification system. It makes it easier for teachers to teach. Because if we talk about this little weird rock that happens to be the third one from the sun, and this little weird rock out here, that it's the ninth rock from the sun. We're really not talking about the ninth rock, but if you don't have a classification, it gets a little hard to talk about rocks. And I think we just need to sit back and put a classification together. And that's what the IAU has always done. So I don't know why they got away from that. They're classifying authority. That's what they need to do.
That's what they did.
That's what they did. Yeah, right. That's the problem.
I'll take two more over here and then come over this side.
I'll be honest, Hal. I don't give a rat's ass about what planethood means. I don't care if something is a planet or not. What I do care about is that we have a good categorization, because without that, and I don't mean definition. I don't care how planets define us. We need a categorization scheme, something to place some objects in, something to place other objects in, and so on and so on. That makes things possible to look at. We can't go through a book or a website of millions of objects and pick one out at random, research it, and then say we've got this whole new good research. That's counterproductive. So we don't need a definition, we need a categorization. And I also wanted to say that we've worried so much about the definition. What we haven't worried about that much is educating about these categorizations. And we need to worry a lot about the education component. And we need these categorizations for the education component. Thank you.
This woman, and then we'll come over here, and then we'll come back.
To answer about why is planet, the term planet, so special, as a writer, one of the things I think is important to consider is maybe if that's not the right question. Maybe we just need to accept that for whatever reason, it is important. It is special to people. And, you know, there are many reasons you could speculate from the beginning. The planets were the, for the ancient Greeks, they were the ones that were different, which made them exotic, which made them, you know, somehow not like the others. And then, you know, all the way to today where we think of planets and we think of strange new worlds, new life forms, and new civilizations. The fact is, planet is important to people. The term means something. And in fact, it does impact funding. A mission to an asteroid will likely not get the same funding as a mission to a planet. It matters to the public. It matters to funders. It matters. And I think at some point we have to just say, accept that. And, you know, there may be many reasons why. But it does, and meet the public, like I said, where they are. And the other, the other thing I was going to say is, I think that the broad category is one of the reasons, I think Americans, you know, when we're in a time of emphasizing inclusion, diversity, people think in terms of it doesn't matter if this person, you know, people speak a different language or they look different or they practice a different religion. We are all human. We're all, there's an emphasis on inclusion. That's a, I guess, a reaction to the exclusion and the persecutions that happen to different people. And I think that in American culture especially, there is an emphasis on being broad, being inclusive, welcoming diversity all under one umbrella. And I think combine that with the fact that planet is, it has the status of a cultural icon, I think you have to, there, at some point there just has to be acceptance that that's where the people are.
Okay, let's go over to the other side of the room. I just wanted to ask, nodding with heads, do not, people not think it's because Earth is one that planet is special? That's the whole, you know, sun is the center of the universe, there's, okay, so I think that's another perspective on that that is, but why then that necessarily gets transferred to Pluto is sort of an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah, I agree with you, Lori. And I said this offline to people. I think it matters to people because we live on a planet,
right,
and therefore they identify much more closely
right,
than they identify with a black hole
or a star,
or a star or whatever have you object in space. We live on a planet. They know that. And so they're going to identify with those things as planets as related, close, special. And just as empirical evidence, look at all the articles that came out around the time of the IAU pronouncements or other things about what constituted promotions and demotions. Now, these weren't scientists. This is just empirical data. It's how the public across many continents and cultures reacted.
They viewed it as a demotion, even though it wasn't called one.
Correct.
Yes.
Now, scientists may feel differently. Now, that really wasn't my main point. I had my hand up because I thought Kelly said something very telling, and I think it's correct.
That down, Kelly.
The thing that I was impressed with your remark, you said yesterday as well, or somebody did, that this is a very representative group. You can imagine, and we have a number of dynamicists here who've been arguing a dynamical point of view. Great. But just to do a thought experiment in your head, we could have had no dynamicists. Instead, what if you had oceanographers demanding that oceans were the key property, and they wanted to see major planets, meaning they had oceans? Or atmospheric scientists, you know, that Mercury thing just doesn't matter to me at all. I just don't think it's a planet. Now, Jupiter, that's where it's at, you know. And Earth's got an atmosphere, and Mars, and Titan, and you could pick your specialty. And what you find, and what we're hearing from the select group is, I want my thing taken into account. And that could be taken into account many different ways. What I'd like to see us do is step back from all that.
That's,
and not the parochial interests, but just to look. And what I try to describe in my talk is that I think all of us have been educated through television, mostly science fiction, to instantly recognize when you see a picture and to categorize. That's a planet or it's not.
I know.
Artist conceptions.
I
know it when I see it right away. And I think that's true in many cultures.
Just like obsession.
In the, you know, those exposed to the media, right? We've just learned that. And I think that something very simple is what we ought to be after, because, in fact, this showed the quote from centuries ago. It was really a prescient quote, you know, that we don't live on air and to ourselves. We have to connect with those who provide the funding so that we can do these kinds of enterprises.
I'd like to
we need to connect to the public's point of view, not just our own.
Let me just respond to this for a second. See, it seems to, from my perspective, using your analogy as the oceanographer, is the oceanographer once is coming in and saying, we have to name the Mediterranean an ocean because it's not fun to swim in it, and we won't get money to fund it if it's not an ocean.
I'm fine with the Mediterranean being
right,
an ocean.
Sorry.
Yeah, so I think part of, I mean, I think this issue of why our planet is so important in the cultural sense is the key to this. And I think a lot of it, though, is really a challenge, or should be a challenge to educators, because I think a lot of it is based on misinformation and even ignorance. I think people get their idea of what a planet is from watching Star Trek and Star Wars. It's a place where you find aliens, sometimes cute aliens with miniskirts. But I wondered when Sarah Seeger was telling about the taxi driver who was anxious to have Pluto reinstated, if that taxi driver knew about Eris and Maki Maki and the other things going on in the Kuiper Belt, I bet a good amount of money that he didn't. And I don't think that's a failing of us astronomers. We're tremendously excited about all that. So I think the real challenge is for educators to find a way to translate this tremendous growth and excitement that's going on in a way that students and the public can understand, because they're interested, but I don't think they're getting what they need right now. And it's really not going to be solved by us coming up with a better definition. It's going to be solved by you guys coming up with a better way to teach it.
I'd just like to comment on that.
We have some responsibility in all that to help interface. You know, maybe next meeting we'll sit on opposite sides of the room, but we'll actually intermingle. That could help.
I just wanted to comment.
I'm sorry.
Hal? I just wanted to comment that I think a lot of the problem in terms of the culture public is it's one thing when somebody tells you that this concept that you have that we think it should be expanded, and it's another thing when they say that, well, I'm sorry, but we're shrinking what you think you know into something smaller. And I think that people kind of, there's a tendency to resist a shrinkage of what they know versus an expansion of what they know. I mean, with expansion, it's new knowledge, it's exciting. With shrinking, somebody was wrong, it's bad. So I think that there's these cultural connotations that is why there was a negative public reaction to what the IU did. That's just a natural reaction.
Let's take a couple more over here and then go back over to the other side.
I'm going to suggest that we really do know why planet equals important happen, and that's horoscopes. It goes back into history. I'm very serious. Knowing where the planets were affected your life, if you believe that stuff. And for 2,000 years, and if you believe what sells in the supermarket still today, planets are important because people, for historical reasons, have assigned an unrealistic importance to those objects and not to objects that are not planets.
Good afternoon. Going back from this gentleman, in the prehistoric days, the coruscating starry canopy, you know, the dark velvety canopy, it attracted the humans from which all this science and the gizmos that we talk about come today. What they saw were only two objects, and that we know as we know now. They didn't even know them. They only saw lights in the sky. Now we know those lights come from being self-luminous or being reflective. So that reflected is either planet or planet-like. And for stars. We just call them stars. Then we went into star-like objects. So still, the cultural part, and culture still binds. I mean, it will be there. Whether the IAU is there, or we are not there to discuss this or not, Pluto was there before us, and Pluto will be there after us. And therefore, I still think the word planet has its own weight. And none of us has the right to take it away, no matter how long we discuss this.
I'd like to, I know you got a couple more hands up over here, but I want to come back over here just to make sure we keep mixing it up, and then we will come back and get you guys. Hal, we're at about 45 minutes here, but we can keep going a little longer, you think? Okay.
Okay, this is just real quick. Everybody knows I'm a space geek at home. Okay? When they came up with the new definition of a planet and Pluto got demoted, I got deluged with phone calls of condolences. I was shocked. I'm like, Pluto's still there. But it was a perception. It was a very, very interesting thing for me to see that, because to me, Pluto's still there. Pluto's still important. But, I mean, calls of condolences? Hello? But how many of you got similar things? Were people call? Yeah. And it's like, there is a perception out there, whatever it is, there's a perception.
My name is Lauren Adams, and I'm the principal of the NASA Explorer School, and we do a lot of open-ended thinking. And so when the controversy arose over Pluto, we weren't really that upset. What struck me is the children's comfort zone was challenged, because their question to me is, well, what about Earth? Okay, so Pluto's not a planet, what happens to us? So what I'm getting from this is it's a comfort zone. You're asking people to leave their comfort zone, and we as teachers, we do have to innovate and create and teach, and so we just continue to talk about it. And the children really weren't that upset, at least from my aspect in our little school. It's all in how you approach it. But it is indeed about comfort zone, and you know, we're part of Earth, and are they going to take away our status? And, you know, they were a little ethnocentric about the whole solar system thing. So I just thought I would share that, because I thought that was very interesting.
That is interesting. Let's take a couple over here.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Wallace. Going back to your question about what's planet, what's important, it reminded me of a story that I read. It was called The Shaman's Apprentice. It was about a gentleman who was a biologist who worked at Harvard, and he went down to the Guyana rainforest. And he was with a Harvard scientist, and they were in the rainforest, and they were with some people who were indigenous to the area who were teaching them about the plants or showing them where they were. And the gentleman from Harvard was classifying absolutely everything that he could get his hands on, and putting things in boxes and putting in, you know, trays and everything. But he asked them, well, how could you possibly understand that this plant goes with this plant in order to solve this problem, you know, and this, or help with this medical issue? And the people who were with him, the Amazon, the people who live in the Amazon, they just looked at him and said, the plants sing to us. And for me, I think that the issue about the planets and whether they're important or not, it's that the planets sing to us in a way that the classifications and everything don't. And I think that's what we felt that we were missing when all this happened. And I think that's what's also missing from the teaching of astronomy, is the right side of the brain, bringing in the arts, the dance, the music, the storytelling, bringing back storytelling, that it's not some stupid story from ancient somewhere that doesn't make any sense. That's people making sense of the world then. We are making sense of the world now. This is our sky lore now that's being created. The Pluto story is a sky lore story. The heroes were her father, and perhaps the anti-hero was Mr. Brown, but he was on his own quest. So I think that if you take the stories and the history and bring it back into it, into the teaching of it, I think it would be bring a lot more people back into astronomy.
Michael, like the idea that he's the anti-hero, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I see that.
I said Mike Brown will like the idea of being the anti-hero. It fits his personality.
I'm just going to point out the impact of the IU decision. We were caught off guard, of course. We thought one resolution was being presented, another was passed. We had no warning whatsoever. What Annette forgot to tell you that she had left for the day to work at her daughter's school, and I had no contact with her. I took all those phone calls. And Patsy across town was even worse. She didn't get lunch and get dressed until well after lunch. The phone calls were not just national, but international. They came from all over, and some of the accents I didn't understand at all. So, and the question was, how do you feel about it? We don't know. We had no idea how to feel about it because we didn't know what the resolution said at that time.
I'd just like to go back to the point mentioned earlier when Hal was asking about why are planets important to people, and also the horoscopes were mentioned. And I'll say something first about horoscopes. Astronomers and educators realize how much we have failed over the past 15, 20 years as the news media have shrunk and shrunk and shrunk. Any number of science reporters call us up or send us email. I have to take the buyout, or I've been laid off, or I've been put on another beat. There are newspapers that abolish their science sections and their science staff. Nobody has dropped the daily horoscope. That's in every newspaper. It's people who decide these things feel that people want them. Then let me go back before that. I think it's the horoscopes just go to, you know, those people who are not very educated or informed even in a modern day or way back when, but there's something deeper in that. I might not have my history right, so Owen will correct this. It's my impression that the reason that the early Roman church and later Roman church for some time was so important to them to keep settled what Aristotle had laid down was that they assumed perhaps that he was right, and they didn't really care, but the point was we have a, as we would say today, a scientific system. We understand these things. They happen to go around the earth at the cycle, whatever. We understand them. They wanted to wean away the common uneducated populace, the peasants and so on, from paganism and the thought that these planets that in some cultures were named after Roman or other gods were in fact gods that controlled your lives. It is reflected to some extent nowadays in astrology. But the church fathers knew that if they wanted to get people to believe in monotheism, that they had to wean the people away from the planets, and it clearly has not entirely been done successfully.
Yeah, one more bet behind you there. Let's go all the way back there.
Huh. Thank you. One earlier comment about being blamed for demoting Pluto. I work at a planetarium that's attached to a college, community college, and the day of the, once it was announced that Pluto is not a real planet anymore, I was walking into the hallway going down to their little bistro to get a snack and went by the bursar's office and somebody rapped on the window. Yo, get in here. I said, what, me? Yes. So I go in the door and he said, what did you do to Pluto? I did nothing. But, you know, that was that type of thing. Everybody was upset. But I just wanted to make one comment, and you and I talked about this earlier. Over here, I guess. So anyway, I've been talking with somebody about it. But I think after listening to all this, first of all, I feel it's such an honor to be here among all of these people who really have participated in this decision in the past as well. I'm learning a lot. one of the things that occurred to me after listening to everybody is that perhaps the real problem is that the concept of taking the word planet and deciding to define it in the first place is the root problem. Mm-hmm. I think if you said planet to anybody, they, in their minds at least, understand what that word means. Why do you have to define something we already know? So I'm much happier with the idea of let's keep it as a generic umbrella something and go along with, sure, what kinds of planets do we have? We have the big ones, we have the rocky ones, we have the dwarfs, if you like. I can be very comfortable with that, and I think the general public could be too. And I think congressmen and senators could be too. They would understand it more on that level. But not the word planet itself. I think that's the problem.
Can I say something? We have a picture in our mind of what a planet is, and expanding that picture to include other things like Pluto, I think makes sense. And then going back to what Mark says, but to say that, well, Pluto, that looks like our picture of a planet, and then saying, oh, but it's not, because it's a little too small, that I think starts affecting one's comfort zone. So an expansion into other things, broadening it, because of our picture in our mind of what a planet is, makes more sense and is more comfortable to people. I think that, I mean, that, to me, that makes a little bit of sense.
Other comments from the panel at this point? It's more of a group discussion, which I think is wonderful. Are you guys okay with that? Do you want to say something, Mom?
Yes, I'm going to report on an absent panelist, Sarah Seeger, who was here earlier and who on the van in said she didn't care about Pluto. She thought it was a good idea to eliminate it. By the time she left here, she had changed her mind because she said she didn't really appreciate how much you people who are the teachers felt strongly about this issue. She got a whole nother kind of social dimension of what was involved. I thought that was that was interesting. I probably shouldn't be tattling on her, but I thought you would like to know that this kind of a meeting has the potential of changing people's ideas.
Sarah is now Pluto hugger.
Well, not quite.
Go, Sarah. All right, as promised, back over here.
It's interesting to me how small accidents sometimes affect things. Owen mentioned very briefly how Brian Marsden was talking about what to do about Ceres and said that could be a class of dwarf planet called Cereals, and everybody laughed and nobody took it seriously. I think it affected the whole dwarf planet idea after that too. I was involved in an accidental incident too at that final meeting that wound up affecting things, for which I am giving a mea culpa. I noticed that the draft resolution on the screen did not exclude satellites, and I thought that was just an accidental mistake in wording, and I raised my hand and I pointed that out, and that's when Rick Binsel, I think it was, up in the front, turned off the PowerPoint view and went and typed in the satellite exclusion. And so, except for that accident, we would have in fact had all the satellites as dwarf planets, or as planets, as Alan was just asking.
Very interesting.
So my follow-up question to the four remaining panelists, and I did discuss this a little bit with David before he left, is that we do have 1 month from now the meeting of the IAU, and if the matter is to be brought up,
one year from now,
and if the matter is to be brought up, it would percolate up through the division on planets, division three, and any of these people in the front or several other people in the room could choose to bring it up. So let me ask the four panelists: would you like to see some discussion, whether it's to revoke things as David asked for or otherwise brought up in Rio next year? Because I think a lot of the public and a lot of the school teachers would, in fact, like to see it up, and I would be glad to participate in the discussion then.
What do you think, guys?
One other thing, it's besides Division 3, how education, or we're talking about an educational perspective, what is the perspective of the education division? I remember its division number with respect to
Commission 46. And
thank
I
you.
Our president now.
Yeah. Yes.
So thank you for pointing that out.
That this is as much an educational concern as it is a scientific concern, and how do we look at it from an educational perspective? And so, Division 46. I bring that up to you.
We'll discuss it, Matthew.
Anyone else want to comment about the next item?
You're a Division 3 member.
I'm not a Division 3 member.
Oh, really? Okay.
I don't know what I am.
Yeah,
I'm
not sure.
I want you all to know that you, because of the way the IAU has been presented, I was not a member of the IAU until a month before the IAU meeting a year ago, and that's only because I wanted to go and attend this NEA meeting. Right? I mean, it's not, at least I'm not sure I was a member or not, actually, because, you know, you don't have to pay dues every year, so they sort of never don't tell
you.
Yeah. Right?
It's if you ever get an email if they're doing email.
Yeah, I joined the IAU 25 years ago, and I know I'm on some commissions. I know I'm on some commissions. I don't know if it must be Division III, because that's planetary stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but there's small bodies, too.
You know, basically the IAU has been, you know, benign pretty much over the years, organizing meetings and things like that. So now I'm waiting for the notice of excommunication stuff. But I don't really expect, maybe this is unreasonable because I've never been active in the IAU. I have low expectations that if Dave Morrison organized an effort to bring this up to revisit it, that anything would happen. I think that it serves as a continuing, because of the import of the IAU as an authoritative body and the weight that's given by other people, news organizations, teachers. I mean, I was hearing about schools saying that we have to follow what the IAU says. You know, it's like, okay, that gets back to Holy Mother Church, but because of the IAU. So I think that as long as there's this difference of perspective, shall we say, or difference of opinions, that there will be continuing open-ended discussion and perhaps the development of two different schools of thoughts. I think that given what we've been saying, I think that maybe if Hal and I got in a room, that we could work it all out. So, even though he is bigger than me. I think that something could be structured leveraged buyout or something.
I was never against that.
Yeah.
I just want to repeat what I said during my talk about the role of the IAU, if I can, because I really do feel strongly about this, this concept that we need to have a consensus from your people's point of view, right, as to what to do. And I think anarchy, it really does no one any good. All right? And so I would not be opposed if the IAU decided to reevaluate this and come up with a cleaner definition, right? I still think practically we would end up with the same thing, right? The eight big guys, dwarf planets, and the small guys. I think we're all in agreement with this, yeah. Right? Does anybody not agree with that? Those three categorizations? So we're really arguing over what we're calling these things, right?
Well,
that's
how
really what we're arguing over.
You're arguing over the relatedness of them, so that if the big guys are something that are really different than the little guys, or the intermediate category, the dwarf planets, which aren't planets, so they're not, they have no relation with the big guys. You know, that's the implication. I think we agree that if they, that like you were saying, that if you have classical planets and dwarf planets, but they're all planets, and these are just a difference of adjectives in front of the nouns, okay, fine, no problem. The problem is that when you have, we need to have separate classification systems for different objects based on whatever. that's where the problem arises.
Okay, I have time to take a couple more, I think, before we should wrap up. So you've been very patient, and I'll take one more over here.
I guess it doesn't mean you.
It doesn't mean me. And then we'll wrap it up, okay?
That's right. I'd just like to address a couple of historical and future perspectives really quickly. You know, think of all the things we discovered in the last 15, 20 years. What are we going to discover in the next 50 to 100 years? We could discover different types of planetary arrangements and dynamics we don't even know about. You know, like these double planet type of things, like a Pluto-Charon type of situation. Or what if we, and on the sociological and cultural level, we discover another Earth body, but it's orbiting a gas giant. Or, you know, this goes back to Alan Stern's point about the whole, depending on where Earth's location is, it's either a planet or not a planet. You know, that just confuses the issue. And then just looking back, how's history going to treat everything that's going on now? It's not going to treat the IAU definition well. And it's probably, and there's going to need to be some sort of consensus that includes, I agree with having incorporating dynamics, but also with physical intrinsic properties. You know, and if it was basically, you know, they're all planets, but we've got the classical big guys, that all works. But if certain objections aren't really dealt with, we're headed toward a great schism. And we have a situation where there's the IAU police, like, trying to pressure, enforce enforcement, you know, notice, you know, the figurative excommunication. That's not science, that's politics. And, you know, we're confusing the issue, confusing the public, and shooting ourselves in the foot. So we have to consider the big picture of where we're going to go. Are we going to look foolish? Or
too late?
Help advance knowledge.
May I make one other comment? Can I make one other comment?
Yes, absolutely.
When we've talked about the Big Eight, we've already excluded the Big 307 or whatever it is now, because objects around other stars are by definition not planets. What the heck are they? And so why is the IAU excluded them? That to me is a big question too. They are planetary-like bodies. They just don't orbit the sun.
That's actually incorrect, so I'd like to respond to that, okay? The IAU, what the IAU did is they didn't want to define the word planet outside the solar system. It's not that they were saying that objects outside the solar system were planets. If you actually read what they did, it was not an exclusionary thing.
Right? That's the way I interpret it.
It says orbits the sun.
It says orbits the sun.
There's a statement at the beginning. For objects in our solar system, we define planets as.
Oh, I guess that's never reproduced.
Yeah.
But it's there, nonetheless.
blame the press for that.
It's there, nonetheless.
I know people are getting restless. We're going to wrap it up here shortly.
My name is Karen Crow. I'm an undergraduate student at the University of Maryland. And I know when you're starting out in middle school, and you always learn to categorize objects starting at the big picture and trickling down, whether that's organizing your paper, and you start with the bubble in the middle, and you say, oh, well, this bubble is connected, and you go on, or a tree going out to the leaves. I don't think it really matters where the word planet ends up, whether it's the trunk of the tree or the leaf, but you need to, I think, when you present it to the general public, show where in that whole scheme going down to solar system bodies, whatever that category is, you need to show them where it is in that diagram. And I think, you know, it would be a lot easier for the general public to accept that if they say, oh, okay, I get it now. You know, like, a planet may be a little subcategory, but there's all these things, and then they connect up to the bigger picture.
What's the context again?
Yeah, and it's an easy form that you're really familiar with, so I don't think it matters where the name ends up. It's just how you present it in the whole general scheme of things.
All right, you're hired. He was very insistent before, and that's where I was trying to. Yeah.
It's up to you.
Okay.
Ask him.
Yeah, but okay.
But I'm going to do this
as the last word,
a question for Annette Tombo. I think it was awful with people who wanted to change the names of schools, etc. But I'm wondering if you think, and Clyde Tombo was very, very famous as the discoverer of one of the nine planets. And if the decision had been, okay, we let in Eris. Then there's a 10th planet. Well, it's not quite as big a deal to be discovered one of the 10 planets, but it's still a big deal. If you had a floor around Pluto, it's still a big deal. It's not a big difference. But is there a bigger, is it different, really, for Clyde Tombaugh to be the discoverer of one of dozens of planets in the solar system versus the counterpart of Piazzi in discovering the first member of actually what Luke Domes referred to as a bigger, better asteroid belt?
How many people know Piazzi?
How many people would know the discoverers of dozens or hundreds of planets?
You were making the relationship.
Yeah, I know.
Do you want to respond? I think she wants to respond.
I will respond. First of all, you used the term planet when you were discussing this. I think that Hera should be considered a planet, even though perhaps Mike Brown didn't think so. I think that the roundness definition is a good definition. I think we should name the objects as planets and then have subcategories. I've taught a long time. I've taught 36 years. I taught at the university in the College of Education as well as teaching kindergarten through that age. I now own a tutoring service. I think in the order of trying to communicate clearly to children that we should use the name planet, because that is the context and the visual imagery that they have. And you have to go from the knowledge they have to increase more knowledge. I was very taken with Renu's presentation. I think later on, once you have built the idea of planet, then you talk about the dynamics of the planets, because I think that's an important concept for them to learn later on, too, in middle school and high school. Thank you.
Why don't we have that be the last word? Would that be horrible? I think we ought to give Mrs. Tombaugh the last word.